Welcome to the Gratitude Podcast, where we connect you with tangible tools, professionals on how to live a joyful life and be happy now. Welcome to the podcast, my friend Q Williams, who trains men on emotional intelligence.
What's up, Daniel? Pumped to be here.
So excited, as this is something that, one, I personally have continued to walk through, and I think it's something I'm getting better at, but I think you have so much value in what you can share with our listeners. And specifically, I think in anything, there's always an opportunity to learn, even if it's your specialty is really men. But even like I've listened to people who specialize in helping women, and I learn a lot from that. So for all of our listeners, tune in. We've got an amazing podcast for you today. So Q, how did you get into what you're doing today?
Well, it's funny you lead off with like the men and women thing. Like I think all of my life, I was kind of the sensitive one in my family, at least. And I think I always like really craved for deeper connections. And, you know, when age seven came around, turns out I was a really good athlete. So I was taller than everyone else. I was stronger than everyone else. I had a pretty good fastball, and the coaches started surrounding me. And so I started realizing, oh, there might be something here. And I think I started to get a lot of affirmation and approval really from what I could do in sports, what I could do with my body, how I could perform. That obviously turned into, you know, more of a leadership stance where I learned a lot from my dad really around what it means to live on your own standards, on your own measuring stick, and really set your own standard for what is full 100% effort. What does it mean to really live out loud, right? And I think one of my favorite things that my dad did was when we were playing peewee football is he would pay me and my brother for every extra block we got in a game.
Wow.
So like, you know, you would never hear a dad say, get two blocks on a football field. It's just like, do your job and the play is over, right? My dad expected us almost to get two blocks. And so these higher expectations, as I reflect, I see such beauty in those. And I also see how it, you know, it was also a lot of stress for me, and it created a lot of trouble for me, I think, later in life. But what an incredible lesson to set your own standards, set your own measuring stick, and go above and beyond. And I think that's really what's led to me, you know, really trying to lead an extraordinary life. And, you know, as I progressed, my standard of success, my standard of just like excellence, has always really been there. I've always really wanted to do more than just like the standard 9-to-5 role. I always wanted to be, you know, the best on my team, as much of a leader as I possibly could, and really leading by example. But the thing is, as I grew in the ranks of baseball and football, I was drafted out of high school in baseball. I played 2 years of baseball in college while also playing football, and I finished out the rest of my career in the Big Ten playing football for 5 years. Earned my master's degree in sports management. And what I sort of later realized was all of that looked really good on paper. I could look back and say, wow, like you got the best education you could going to Northwestern, basically an Ivy League school in the Big Ten. You're a Gator Bowl champion. You did all the right things. Yet at the end of the day, I couldn't figure out what the heck I wanted to do beyond sports. Like I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. I knew I wanted to be excellent. I wanted to do something different, but I couldn't figure out what it was. And more importantly, even if I did know what it was, I had business plans upon business plans. I didn't have the guts to actually go out and do it.
Wow.
I was so scared of what other people would think because I had this perfect record. I had this perfect facade of, you know, graduating from, you know, I was class president in high school. I was getting that extra block throughout my football career, playing all out. And, you know, I went to a big time institution. And then when I graduated, I got my master's, and it's like, wow, how do I live up to that in my real life? There was all this pressure that I was putting on myself to live at that level right off the bat. What I found was a lot of athletes, especially football players, were experiencing a lot of mental health issues after sports. I learned about this in 2012 in my master's program studying sports management, how the concussion crisis was plaguing a lot of former football players. This is years before the concussion movie came out. This is like, I'm like, wow, this is like, I almost felt like I was like learning about Uber, you know, for the first, like this idea of Uber or like some cool tech company I could start. Like I found this idea, I found this niche. But it wasn't like an app I could start or solve some kind of like convenience problem, I could maybe solve the problem of mental health for men, specifically football players. So I started doing a lot of research. And as I researched more, I learned it was much less of a brain problem, which that's definitely a biological thing that, you know, happens. And I have my own history of concussions that we can get into. But I realized there was more of a mental wellness and a life setup that was missing from a lot of athletes' lives. And if you ask most athletes today, a lot of them tie their identity to their sport.
Right.
You know, just like I did. I saw the value that I could create by using my body, using my intellect to make plays, to lead. But as it related to life, you know, I had gaps. I had missing pieces. I had areas of my life that I had avoided because I was so busy with sports, right? And it was beautiful to an extent, but of course there were pieces missing. And so when I started putting the pieces together, I realized I wasn't the only one that was struggling with this. Many men were struggling much deeper than I was. And you see the likes of, you know, Aaron Hernandez and his documentary about, you know, all of the crime, and but also all of the trauma from his childhood and how he was carrying two identities of being a closeted bisexual. Like, there's so much that goes into the athlete experience that we don't see behind the scenes. And so as I really researched more, I started to see that this is much more than a brain problem. It was a mental wellness and a life problem. Junior Seau, similar sort of experience, like San Diego guy. A lot of his business arrangements were kind of falling apart towards the later end of his life. And, you know, when he took his life, it was a surprise to many people. But for some, it was like, wow, like Junior didn't find his purpose. He couldn't find his footing beyond sports, right, the way that he thought he would. And so this is a long, long-winded answer to, like, how I got into this. But, you know, this is the real trajectory. Like, I thought I was going to be helping just athletes, but now I've realized there's a much bigger, you know, cut of the pie, which is just men in general that are facing a lot right now when it comes to emotional vulnerability, emotional wellness, the standard and the examples they've been set by their fathers, by movie characters. Like where did you learn to be a man? You know, maybe you learn from football players. Maybe you learn from Arnold Schwarzenegger watching, you know, Terminator, right? Maybe it was Mr. Rogers, you know, like for some kids, like Mr. Rogers actually filmed all of his TV shows right next to my high school. I lived in Mr. Rogers' neighborhood.
Wow.
So, but as a kid, I never really adopted Mr. Rogers. Like, I didn't really get it. Today, I get it. I really get it. Like, when I watch his documentaries and I watch his work, I'm like, wow. He was doing like God's work, you know? So I'm trying to be the modern day Mr. Rogers as much as I can and live by that example. And that's how I've gotten to doing what I do now, which is to answer your question. I focus on men's mental wellness, especially locally here in San Diego. I run a lot of events and I run a lot of programming online. And then I also work with a lot of athletes on their life and their identity beyond sports, prepare them for that transition and also help them through it.
Wow, that's powerful.
Yeah.
And I think, one, you started with the athletes, but you probably, what you found, it sounds like, is that all men to a certain, or will find that at a certain time, right? So I got validation when I was younger of once sports and women came into the picture, I wasn't excluded. And then I was in the in crowd. So now everything I do is tied to performance-based validation. That's something that I've continued to overcome, but it's a dynamic, right? There's a tension there. So you found, okay, this isn't just the football athletes. It's a lot of different people, whether it's in how they look or whatever their identity is based in, but helping them to overcome that. So when you're talking about identity and helping somebody to put their identity in something that's not what they do, how do you help somebody go through that?
Yeah, perfect example. Just sat down with a bunch of current and former, like, pro tennis players, Olympic biathletes, former track and field athletes. Sat down with them yesterday over Zoom for this group program that I run. And the first time we're jumping on, they're all introducing themselves. And the natural inclination is to introduce yourself saying, you know, my name's Q. I play two sports. We just won the Gator Bowl last year. I'm starting defensive end for the Northwestern Wildcats, right? Happy to be here. And it's pretty short, right? Because, like, that speaks for itself. And every athlete pretty much did that when we asked them to introduce themselves. Maybe they said, like, where they're from, what their hometown is. But then I had them do a second exercise. I had them, let's go back around. Let's do the same intros, but I want you to do that without mentioning sports. And what you find athletes do, and I think men do this too, is like when you can't rely on your titles or your accolades or what you've done, you resort to what are the essence? What's the essence of you? How would you describe yourself? You know, people lean into things and they kind of have a big aha during this exercise where they're like, wow, I'm creative. I love the arts. They kind of go back to this like younger version of themselves when they were a kid before sports became a thing.
Right.
You know, like for me, I was like the oddball. I was the sensitive one. I was the one that would hang out in mom's kitchens and talk to them. Like I've always been more mature. I would like, I'm closer with a lot of my friends' parents than I am them in many ways. Right. I love relating and getting history lessons. I love the concept of like history repeating itself. You know, like, so I'm now introducing myself without mentioning sports right now. And so when athletes do this, they realize they're way more dynamic than what they do for a living or what they've done all their life. And sports was really just a channel and outlet for who they truly are. So naturally there's some more processes we can go down to actually pinpoint truly who they are. And that comes down to your core identity. Like who are you without the titles? Who have you always been? And there's a lot of ways to arrive at that, but that's the big differentiator is like, don't rely on that title, rely on ways you would describe yourself, you know, adjectives, things like creative, playful, loving, compassionate, those sorts of things.
That's powerful. And so do you have questions? So that's the start of it. Okay. Introduce yourself without that. And even that brings up a number of dynamics. And I did some work within, I call it authenticity coaching, but it's parts work.
Yeah.
To get down to my authentic self. And I was speaking once and I was going to introduce myself as the person, but then I was like, wait a second. I actually felt convicted and was like, no, I'm going to introduce myself of who I actually am.
Right.
I'm Daniel. I'm joyfully charismatic. I'm connected. I love to learn. And so like we came down to three or four different, almost like values in a way or core beliefs. And it's been interesting to see that continue to come up. Oh, this is, I am what I do. Nope. And it's like this ebb and flow. So if you're helping somebody through that, like what if somebody like an athlete or a man says, well, I don't know, like I've always just been Daniel, the businessman or the football player or whatever that is. What are some ways that you continue to pull that gold out of them?
I mean, it's a matter of like, you know, often it comes with like writing down a long list, for instance, of all the ways that you would describe yourself. And similar to what you did in parts work, it's like actually requiring someone to narrow that down. Like if they really had to choose what their core values are or really had to choose how they would really define themselves at the core, you ultimately have to do that. You have to cross words out. You have to say, this is not as important as these three things are. For me, it's joyful, adventurous, and responsible. We're pretty similar in those categories, right? And I think when I'm living from that and I'm prioritizing those things, then like, I mean, it's lights out, you know what I mean? And so, sometimes it can be tough because a lot of athletes haven't, you know, oriented themselves this way, but I usually don't have a lot of trouble. It's usually just a matter of like, you know, just continuing to kind of egg it on and maybe give them some examples and show them, for instance, a great example is, Russell Wilson, a book written by Trevor Moad. Trevor Moad was his mental performance consultant since
I've heard
like
him speak and met him a couple times.
Oh, he's unfortunately great. Yeah, passed. Unfortunately passed away. Love his book. It's called It Takes What It Takes, and they go through Russell's approach basically. I think this idea of like an approach or like a reset button is what Russell would use. So whenever he would kind of get off kilter, and I'm sure he still does this today. Something isn't going the way that he wants to, he comes back to the basics, the foundation, the principles, right? The three things that like make him who he is and make him good. And, you know, for me, like when I was playing baseball, for instance, like a coach would remind me, come back to your mechanics, come back to like the things that like are simple. Cause you know, often you're trying to overthrow, you're trying to overperform, or you're trying to avoid this. It's fear-based, right? And so what Russell would do is he still does this is he comes back to like the three things. For him, I think I'm going to butcher it. I think it's like keep your eyes downfield as a quarterback. Keep your eyes downfield. Two is like stay balanced. And I think the third might be like stay level, like stay neutral. It's one of his defining characteristics is always staying neutral, never too high, never too low.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's powerful. And I love that you can come back to almost like that centering, right? Let's get back to center. Let's get back to where we're supposed to be. And he has the the results of being somebody who's been able to navigate a number of tough situations within sports and have really a level or a neutral head, like you said. So identity is one piece of that. So we say what you saw when you started this is the problem is that people were finding their identity in something other than themselves. But the solution I think that you've helped create is much bigger than just identity. It seems that you're truly helping people to find purpose and why we're reconnecting even the word and like live a joyful life, be in a place of joy. So what are some of the other dynamics that, and when you say plan, in my head, I was like, oh, he's got a formula. Tell me the formula. I'm very much a tell me what to do and I'll do it. But then you also have to, you want to be as well.
So many guys are like that. Like they want the playbook, you know, like, and that's what a lot of athletes face is like, they just leave sports or maybe they leave a job. If it's a man, like, just give me a playbook. Just tell me what to do. I've worked with a former NFL and he's like, just cute. Just tell me what to do and I'll go do it. And I'll just crush it. I'm like, I'm not going to do that, bro. There's no way you're going to get me to tell you what to do. Because it's not about me having the answers. I have opinions. It's a matter of you actually trusting yourself to go out there and create your own path. Actually come back to who you truly are. So I was like, I'm hands off on that, bro. And luckily he's announcing now for the Big Ten Network. Like he's crushing it, right? And he feels like he's in his flow. But he had to make that choice himself.
Right.
It wasn't going to be me.
So when you're working with somebody, it's not necessarily saying, hey, here is the plan. This is what you need to go and do. But instead asking the questions so that they can, so they or we can find that ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And actually like to build on what I think you're going to ask is like, how do you find purpose? I think, you know, for him, for that example, I don't want to harp on him too much because I also don't want to give him away. It's confidentiality reasons, but, you know, for someone like that, you have to also trust that like your first choice might not be the choice. And I think, one thing many athletes get stuck in is like that they've been doing one thing for almost all their life, most of them since they were 7 years old through like maybe age 30, right? And so they give it up and they've been on this one track doing one thing and they think that there's going to be one other thing that they're going to do for the rest of their life. Well, that's how it's supposed to go because that's how it's gone. So the concept of failing or like not liking what you first do is totally foreign. So there becomes this huge pressure on this first job. Same thing that a lot of men face coming out of college. Like, I need to make money. I need to make sure that I like this. I need to, all this pressure. I need to figure out what I'm doing. Whereas if you hear Gary Vee talk, it's like, screw it, man. Like, just jump into something. Try things out. Your 20s are more about, like, seeing what you don't want versus what you do want, you know? Right. It's a process of elimination. And so I think one thing that, you know, I had to really support a lot of these athletes with is, like, you know, realizing it's not going to be perfect. You're not going to be excellent at this at first, this life after sports thing, because you haven't done it, right? So you're not going to be quite world class first off, but it'll come and it'll grow. And your unique nature as an athlete that's made you great is going to evolve. It's gonna fuel that. It's gonna go faster than the average person, but it's not going to be perfect at first. But to build on that, how do you find purpose? One of my favorite questions to ask, well, two of my favorite questions. One is like, if you could give a TED talk to the world, if you could have a podcast, you could be one topic, what would that topic be? What would it be? Open to it evolving, right? Like even when I chose my career, like I knew it would evolve, like it's going to evolve, but this is where I'm at now. What would that first thing be? And the answers you get from that question are pretty stellar, right? Like I have like three TED talks I have already outlined in my head, but I had to pick one, you know? That's why we're sitting here today.
What's your one?
Well, actually, it's two. Okay.
I had two as well. We're men of abundance.
Yeah, we are. It's that adventurous part of us, you know, that wants to have multi passions, right, and have a lot of different outcomes and curiosities. But probably for me, it would be around basically how the concussion crisis is more than just a concussion crisis. It's a mental health sort of struggle that many men and women go through with their transition beyond sports. So really connecting the transition with the concussion issue and giving people a bit of an update and upgrade to what they know about head trauma overall. Yeah, that's probably what it'd be about.
Nice.
Yeah.
So that's the first one.
That's the first one. The second one is around men's emotional intelligence.
Okay.
And actually, probably specifically, it would be around anger. And what I'm going to touch on with anger relates back to purpose. I find that guys will come on my retreats, they'll come out to my men's groups or my meetups, and you can just kind of tell like that they've been living a life lately of like this kind of like passivity, right? This like kind of like coyness, this like kind of shyness within their body and their character, right? And I was like this for a lot of my life after sports. Like I was a little timid. I was afraid to ask for what I wanted. I was afraid to stand up for what I believed in because I was in new environments, living a new identity. And I find that a lot of those men are holding back part of their anger because often we've seen maybe that anger play out in a negative way. For me, you know, my anger was great for the football field, but bringing that into the boardroom wasn't very effective at first, right?
Right.
But what's behind anger? What's actually underneath anger? When you actually peel it back, anger is not a bad thing off the cuff, right? It's not just like, don't feel anger. Anger is actually a protective mechanism. And for the masculine within all of us, we need anger. We need anger to set and retain boundaries. So when you can't access your anger, when you've, you know, demonized your anger just as like a full stop, no anger, it's bad. You lose access to the ability to set standards, to set boundaries, to say what you want, to stand for what you want. And I think a lot of men lose kind of that backbone that makes us men, right? And so when I have men access their anger, something unlocks.
Wow.
Totally unlocks. And I've watched it happen, like right in front of my face. We had a retreat this past year in Joshua Tree, and it kind of just naturally happened. But this guy eventually said we were on this like long like walk. It was just like a 2-hour hike. And on hour two, he comes up to me and says, you know, in that last exercise, when we were just like out in nature, just by ourselves, I kind of wanted to scream at the top of my lungs. And I was like, why didn't you? He's like, I don't know. I was kind of afraid to, you know, I used to be an angry kid. And many years ago, I stopped being angry. And I'm like, bro, you got to let that out. You got to like, you've never done a primal scream in nature before. Like, have you done that before? Like,
I haven't in nature. I've done it after breath work into the pillow.
Solid. Great place to do it. Perfect space to access that anger, right? Is the breathwork ceremony, something like that, that stirs things up. For him, it was that moment of silence, that hour of silence in nature that stirred something up in him. Like when I'm actually still, I feel this freaking fire in me. You know what I mean? It's like this burning that I've been avoiding. So I think of that as it relates to so many emotions that we have, but anger's probably chief of all those.
Right. And I want to stay there, one, because mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of power in that, and two, because I am exactly that person that really? You spoke about.
Wow.
Really angry in sports, punched a friend in the face over a pickup basketball, got kicked out of a JV basketball game for that. I remember a time where I lost in tennis to my dad, and I hit the tennis ball up and over two courts, and one of his, he was a lawyer, one of his clients was there. And so we remember what we remember is important. And he explained to me like how that in a very calm way, but like how that impacts him having a son who is acting that way. And so even today, everyone who's ever, I'm a pretty peaceful person. Mm-hmm. And so that dynamic of allowing anger in and the way from what I'm hearing you say is anger can help us to be a, almost like a light post or like shine light on, okay, well, one of my boundaries or is being crossed. So how do we have a healthy outside of actually feeling it? Like I explained before the podcast, I strive to feel more emotions. I have the emotional wheel on there and actually ask myself the questions. And for viewers who aren't aware, the emotional wheel is great. Google it if you don't have it, but it helps to show all the different emotions. But back to my question is how do we, outside of like a primal scream, how do we have or facilitate a healthy relationship with anger?
Yeah, well, yeah, you're right. Like stirring up the emotion is one thing in the moment. Sometimes you're going to feel just angry anyways, right? Like something pops up, something comes up and you feel the anger. And how do you express that in a healthy way? So there's kind of two ways to go about it. Well, there's many ways to go about expressing anger. One is obviously, you know, having more of a ceremony for it, like actually like honoring the anger, like taking some space out, carving out some space, actually journaling out, maybe speaking out some words of who you're angry at or what you're angry at. Maybe you're even angry at yourself. This is more of like a calculated process. And then you can actually, there's a whole process that I can take men through for that, that I've gone through myself many times, that helps me really understand what's truly at the core and where I do need to set boundaries and release anger in the process and let go of that. But I find that most men like kind of just need something a little bit more quick hitting, right? Like kind of like more like in the moment. So like I have a video of this on TikTok and Instagram that like went crazy because it's a video of just, I was literally frustrated trying to make videos of like content. Like I'm sure you're familiar with this. Trying to make a video, screwing up, just not feeling inspired, feeling really perfectionistic around it. And I'm still filming and I'm like, I'm pissed. I'm just going to go do a little thing. So I go into my garage. I film myself throwing down pillows, punching those pillows for about 5 minutes, like beating the shit out of them. Like, I'm not saying like, just like punching. Cause you know, you'll have someone like kind of give a little tap, right. Or a punch. And like, they're like, I don't really feel it. If you actually get your full body into it, like I start like stomping on these things. Right. I have a pad in my garage that I'll like stomp on, and like something about the hips. I hold energy in my hips, hold a lot of tension and frustration in my hips.
A lot of men do, right?
Oh, totally. Yeah. A lot of like back problems, I believe, are more related to the hips or just some tightness and some tension or some stuck emotion. And so, yeah, like move the whole body, move that around. And what you'll find, and this is where it gets interesting, is once you expel the anger, you often find that there was a lot more than just anger there. So the tricky thing about anger is there's two major forms of anger. One is to, like I said, it's a protector. It's necessary. It's something that's primal in us, you know, especially as like the men, like to protect, you know, the women, to protect the young, to protect this, you know, our land, for instance, to set boundaries, to literally build a fence, right? To right. Be angry. That shoos people away, shoos things away, shoos animals away. And that's protecting your safety. Modern day, that can be your emotional safety too. That's necessary often. Like if someone's actually crossing a boundary that you've set together and you're not able to come up and say, hey, you're crossing a boundary. We agreed you weren't going to talk about this, or we agreed, you know, as friends, we don't treat each other this way, right? Or we don't say these words. Like if you can't hold that boundary with a smidge of anger, then what do you have, right? You probably have broken boundaries. You probably, you know, a doormat, right? You're flimsy, right? So that's a way where we're protecting necessarily ourself, our emotions, our mental well-being for all good reasons. Now, it's interesting though, like there's a second purpose to anger, which can be often like protecting our ego, right? And so it's like the anger comes out, but it's actually a secondary emotion to something deeper. And so it's this anger, but it's like, I'm actually really embarrassed that I failed on the football field, or I didn't do as my dad said I should. So I'm angry at myself and I feel this shame. I feel this guilt for something, for instance, right? Maybe I feel sad or disappointed. Maybe, you know, maybe God forbid, like someone dies in your life and you don't process that fully as a man. You don't really like allow yourself to grieve. And you go about your life, you stuff that away. It's like something else is more important. You don't take the space to process. That sadness turns into you blowing up on somebody in the wrong person, in the wrong environment, maybe in the boardroom, maybe at a tennis match with your dad, right? I don't know, right? But there are certain situations where that tank of emotion will just explode. It's like, because right. You haven't let off some steam in a while. And so, anger is often the surface level emotion for sadness, fear, and shame or guilt.
Those are the four, that sadness, fear, or shame and guilt.
Yeah.
And so what I'm hearing you say is that anger is first a protector, but then we can also dive deep into what am I protecting myself in a healthy way, or am I protecting my ego?
Right.
So how would I get to see what some like what that sadness or fear or guilt or shame it could be coming from.
Mm-hmm.
How would you, what other questions, what would we ask ourselves to get to that?
You have to express it, man. You have to like get it out of your system because it's stuck in there. Maybe it's in your head, you know? What we say out loud is like twice as valuable and twice as meaningful than like what's in our head. So once you start talking about it or writing it down or acting it out, it, level upon level, it gets more potent and more powerful. So that's why talk therapy can be so helpful. That's why men's groups can be really helpful because you actually get to share openly and honestly about what you're actually angry about, and what's deeper beneath the surface underneath your anger. I mean, this was my primary emotion. Like one of my original men's group founders, Dan Doty, he just told me the other day, he's a mentor of mine. He said, you know, Q, you had a stick up your ass for like the first year in men's group. I was like, no one's ever fucking told me that. Like what? Like what is that? I literally had to Google what stick up your ass meant. And I was like, this feels like really bad. But basically I was just like very anal. Like I was just like, I had this anger or just like this frustration when people didn't do things the way that I wanted them to, or they didn't operate the way that I wanted them to. And underneath that was like a deep fear that if we don't follow the rules, chaos will ensue. And my life or my ego will be in jeopardy. And that takes me back to my childhood. Like if rules weren't followed, like it was like, oh man, like the world ends. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I like when I feel fear, I feel my shoulders tense up, right? And it's like, that's where a lot of my back pain comes from. So if I can actually access the anger, talk about it, verbalize it, maybe even actually express it physically, and some of my men's groups will actually, we'll do that. We'll punch pillows. We'll scream into a pillow. We'll do exercises like that, right?
They have anger rooms now, right?
Yeah, they do.
Like break stuff.
They do. It's hard for me to get in the mood for that when there's people watching, though. I got to be honest. I think like rage rooms, I had the idea that was one of my business ideas back in the day, like start rage rooms, like just put me in a room and let me freaking go nuts. Let me turn that switch on, you know? I had a hard time when I went because there were friends watching me. It felt like a vulnerable thing to do. To actually access my rage, actually access my full anger. Like I went out, but I didn't really go all out, you know?
Right.
Cause it's
which
like,
is interesting to see like, okay, is that experience of letting the anger out and even the way that you did it in your garage, is that something that's more of a personal, like, hey, this is most powerful to do in this way?
Arguably. Yeah, I think so. Because just like we were kind of referring to earlier, like it can become a performance, you know? We're performing anger at that point, like to show people what we're angry about, or like that we're tough, that we can, you know, we can hit these things. Like, you know, they give you like a lead pipe or something like that to like throw around and like hit things. But I think I access way more anger when I'm on my own. And I think there's a healthy balance of that. I don't think isolation all the time is the best thing. I don't think always being with people is the best thing. I think a healthy balance to each their own. To have your own solitude is really important as a man. To have things that are your own is just so valuable. That's why having my garage when I had a house was just so great. Like having that man cave, it's sacred, you know? So, yeah.
And that's an interesting thing that it's not all or one or the other. It would be much easier if you could just say, hey, be around friends all the time or be alone all the time. And it's like, no, the human experience in life is really weaving back and forth, and even the rhythms of life will create different dynamics where you may have more time alone or more there, which leads to my next question is how, and you brought this up with in your men's group, right? So when I'm thinking at first about doing this, I'm like, okay, well, I'll journal or I'll go do something alone, which is powerful. But there's also something that's unlocked when we're in a group of people being vulnerable and hearing that we're not alone. And then, I mean, for me, I learn with examples. I'm like, okay, give me an example. Okay, I can relate that to myself. Great. So how important is, one, your community, and two, these types of environments to have an open and vulnerable conversation?
It's absolutely huge. Like, I actually just reached out to a friend of mine. He's the former CEO of Kraft. I don't think he'll have a problem with me sharing this. His name's Tony Vernon. He's the father of an old teammate of mine. And I asked him some advice. I reach out to him once in a while and I'm like, I'm struggling with this. I'm feeling a little imbalanced financially with how I'm balancing this, with where I'm showing up. And he gave me a reference. He said, I'm trying to tie this back to exactly what you just said. What was the question you asked me?
It was how important is who you surround yourself with in community, yeah, and then also an open open environment, yeah, to have conversations.
And so he reminded me about this for myself, because I need this just as much as every man does, is who is your board of advisors, you know, around your life, right? Like, who's actually supporting you, keeping you honest to what's important in your life? So he passed me a book reference of a colleague of his called Your 168. It talks about like how you spend your time. But more importantly, he really doubled down on this concept of like, who are you surrounding yourself with? Who are you talking to? Are they your trusted advisors? And so that really helped me, because as an entrepreneur, like, it's really important, I think, to surround yourself with like-minded people. And for many years, I struggled with that. Like, I had a hard time finding other people that wanted to build a business. Most of my friends and teammates just wanted to go the corporate consulting route, like most Northwestern grads do. They wanted to go like medical device sales, or just do whatever, you know, came up, right, that they were being recruited for as an athlete. And I just wanted something different, you know? So for me, I needed to find my tribe. I needed to find people that I could trust with all parts of me, and they wouldn't judge things or for me creating my own path or having a different path. Number two, like, I needed to respect them. I really needed to, like, respect them in a way that I think you can only really build respect through experience and actually experiencing someone in their vulnerability, their ability to actually be honest. I think that's how I build trust and respect. And then it's just a matter of like the number of people. I think it's important to keep that circle tight, not too big or too expansive, because then you get a lot of different perspectives. But you never want to limit yourself either. I think a lot of men are limiting themselves because they don't surround themselves with the people that are going to support them. They're going to trust them, respect them, value them, and lift them up when they need that. So in the sphere of like a men's group, for instance, you do find that you're not alone. That, you know, when you share something that you feel like you've been thinking about for years, maybe all your life, that you've never actually said out loud, it's like the world opens up, because you see guys around the circle, they're like, yeah, I felt that. I feel the same way. I've been thinking that as well. I'm so glad you said that, Q. Like, I'm so glad you spoke up, because if you didn't do that, I wasn't going to do it. So now it's out there, and now we can all relate to it. And now none of us are alone, and we're all going through the same thing. To add on to that, I think there's also this kind of preconceived notion that most men's groups or those kind of environments are going to be all like sad or fear or shame or guilt, those kinds of things.
Right, just all overcoming trauma.
Yeah, like, it's not a trauma group. It's not a support group. Like, it's far more than that. Like, we do cover those things, but it's also about like expressing joy. One of the most vulnerable things we can do is truly be fully expressed and joyful. So if you put me in a rage room expressing anger, I'm going to feel like I'm performing. I'm going to feel really anxious in front. Like, it's going to feel like a vulnerable experience to really be fully angry. At the same rate, most of us can't be fully joyful with many people in our life. Like, most of us can't belly laugh uncontrollably with many people, you know? Like, I know I can't. Like, I have to really trust you. You have to really understand me. You have to understand my kind of like, you know, sense of humor, right? And there's trust that's been built that allows us to really experience that full level of laughter, that full level of joy. Because what happens when you're joyful? It's like, you know, some people are so afraid that the other shoe's going to drop, you know, like something's going to come up and undercut it and something, right, like, or you don't deserve to be joyful right now. Right?
Wow.
Some of us were told that growing up, like, you need to be working. You shouldn't be resting. You should be doing this. So many of us as men are told that, right? Like, you don't deserve that until you work. Right. And so, I mean, I go through this in my mind all the time. I'm like, should I work out in the morning and then, you know, work, or should I do my work, get my work done, and then I can go enjoy a workout, right? Like, that catch 22 is my biggest hurdle mentally.
Right. I've had that conversation all the time too.
Right? Like, what do I put first? And like, am I working so that I can play, or is it a mix? Is it a balance? And is it okay to be joyful? Is it okay for it to be easy? Is it okay for me to enjoy it?
Which is a great question. Like, is it okay for it to be seamless, and that it, rather than what we're taught is, oh, you've got to overcome, it's got to be hard. When if you're, we're operating in our gifting, Yeah. A lot of times it will be seamless. There's always going to be hard work. It's tied with action within that. But that's spot on. And I love what you're saying, because it's not only minimizing anger, we're minimizing joy. And I've even had those conversations with people, or even like started doing a lunch once a month with some other friends who own businesses. And one of the woman who was in it, she's like, I don't feel like we know each other through volleyball. She's like, I don't feel like I can share these wins of me building my business with anyone else, because I don't know anyone else who's doing the same thing. So she's minimizing, you know, some people, some maybe she plays volleyball with some stay-at-home moms, and then some other people who work in a business, which nothing against that.
Right.
But she felt like she couldn't be fully herself or celebrate those things with these people. One, because maybe they didn't understand what she was going through, or two, mostly because of the thoughts in her head.
Yeah.
And so it created a space where, okay, I can just have even a different group. We call it a braggadocious moment. Like, I just want to celebrate. Like, I crushed this, and it's okay.
Yeah. And I think what's so cool about that is, like, you know, maybe those friends in that like lunch group you started where you share your wins, maybe that becomes your new set of friends. Or maybe your men's group becomes your set of friends. I'm not going to judge anybody for making that their thing, but ideally for me, a men's group or these kinds of environments, it's really a training ground for the rest of your life. Mm. It's a training ground for you to share your wins and share them with strength, vulnerability, openness, and be like unflinching with your level of success, right? On the same token, like in your real life, being able to share all your frustrations, all your sadness, all your disappointment, all the ways that people have disappointed you, have let you down. I just had this come up today. Like, I had a friend back home who, like, I was hoping would come to my event. He was, like, one of my best friends. I was hoping he'd, like, show up because I want him to experience, like, this work and stuff like that. And he tells me he can't make it until, like, you know, 8 o'clock. And I'm like, man, like, I could let this linger, or I could use the training that I've done in my men's group and actually use it in life, right? Like, take it out of the container and use it. And I texted him, I could have called him, but I texted him and said, hey man, like, thanks for letting me know. I'm a little bummed. Like, I was really hoping and like really wishing for you to experience this, because this is my life's work. I really want you to see what I do firsthand, get to experience it so I can feel more connected to you. And so I'm feeling disappointed. And like, this is what I want. So that's like this vulnerable part of me. It's saying, like, I'm actually sad right now. The immature version of me would say, I'm angry. I'm mad at him. I'm not mad at him. He has two kids at home, right? I'm not like mad. I'm just disappointed. I'm sad, right? That he's choosing this over my event, right? And so, like, I'm not making him wrong. It's just my emotional experience. And it offered the opportunity for us to actually connect deeper. He actually felt me. He actually understood where I was coming from. And he was able to say, man, like, thanks for sharing that with me. I want to be there too. This is actually how I feel. So he met me in that moment. Right? Wow. And so when we don't share those things, we lose that opportunity. We lose the capacity to connect deeper with the people we care about.
And that's such an amazing, and I love that you said emotional experience, because then it says, it almost like gives you the space to say, hey, this is the way I'm feeling, and go about it in such a powerful way to communicate that with somebody else. And I think that's one of the things, like, we want to, one, feel emotions, but what is behind that is because I can speak for myself, I want to be connected and I want to be able to communicate that with somebody else, as well as understand it myself and feel the full spectrum of emotions. So how is it that you help to facilitate that communication, whether it's between, like with men, that's a friendship, right? Mm-hmm. Some of the biggest frustrations I'll share with me as of recent is the friendship, business partnership dynamic of navigating back and forth with that, or also the relationship of men to women. So how do you help to facilitate communication and that emotional intelligence? And those might be two separate questions in terms of that, but I think it'd be really powerful to hear.
Totally. I think one of the biggest gifts that we can give the world, you know, and this is not speaking like dogmatically, but I think most men in my experience want to show up with presence. And a lot of the biggest like men's teachers and polarity teachers out there, like David Data, John Wineland, some of these bigger names that I've studied for years, will say that like the new paradigm of masculinity, this maybe relates best to like male-female dynamics, right? The second part of your question. And so it's like, what I think a man can do best right now, because, you know, being the breadwinner isn't as celebrated as much. Being the provider, being the protector, these roles are no longer solely served by men. And so with these changing roles, you know, for better or for worse, however we want to define that, but that's the reality. In many relationships, there's, you know, there's kind of this like, there's this even playing field that's involved, where the man doesn't find value in what he can do, how he can provide, how he can create safety. And so he's left with, how do I provide value? How do I show up as worthy in this relationship? And that sucks, right? Like, let's be clear about that. That is hard for a lot of men. Like, you would hear the word emasculation being thrown around, right? Like, I mean, men want to be of value. They want to be of service. And what these like scholars in this work, and like really deep practitioners in this work, would say is that men get to express their presence, their ability to hold space, to be grounded when there's conflict. That's the deepest core masculine component that we have, that everybody has, that all women have as well, all genders, all everything. So we all have that capacity, but as men, we're often most we're most leaning towards wanting to express that. And so the level of presence that we can have amidst chaos, amidst emotion, amidst conflict, amidst you did this and you should have done that, or like I'm upset. Like, if we can just show up to those conversations with loved ones with just presence, realizing that we're not the enemy and we're not being attacked in this moment, that we're not the cause of these emotions, that we're not the problem necessarily. If we can just show up unfazed, that is like one of the most powerful things we can do as men. Because, you know, when you have a woman or a partner or anyone walk up to you and start expressing emotionally, and this will happen in group too with other men, can I just hold the space for that person? Can I just be present with them without having to turn away from them crying or them getting angry or getting afraid of that? Can I just let them be angry? Can I just let them be sad? Can I let them be fearful without me having to fix it as a man? Because fixing it would be going into me doing something, me providing, me protecting. But most, this is like one of the biggest hacks in like male-female relationships, is like, I don't need to fix you. A lot of women, when they bring an emotional situation up, they don't want to be fixed in that moment. They don't want you to provide a solution, at least not yet. Most women just want your presence to be heard, to be understood, to be felt. So instead of saying, I'm feeling this way, okay, honey, let's fix this. Let's get you set up, right? Like, we'll go buy you this, right? What you could do instead is first say, wow, that sucks. That must be really hard. I'm here for you. Like, let's talk about this. What else do you want to say about this? What else are you feeling? How's that impacting you? Right. So it's listening. It's active listening. It's being curious. One of your core competencies.
I love that word, curiosity.
Yeah. So just show up with curiosity and not assume that like we're the cause of this, or like that it needs to be fixed right now, or some kind of fire. Think that a lot of men kind of confuse emotions with chaos, where it's just emotions, right? It's not a problem necessarily. It's just an emotional experience. Just like I brought up earlier with my friend, like, it's not the end of the world that I'm sad, but you know, once I express it, get it out of my body, I talk about it. Okay. You know, we can move on, you know, now, right? Like, we can agree to something new and we can move on. And often what I find is with male relationships and then also like romantic relationships, sometimes once a man just starts expressing, or a woman starts expressing, and they just have the space to be held, judgment free, fixing free, advice free, their problems solve themselves.
Right. And that's one of the differences, that men and women are different in that dynamic, right? Women are more prone to some of the dynamics with emotions, and men, we want to solve problems. That's kind of, it's a blanket statement, right?
So,
there's
totally.
Obviously that we talked about
totally. Generalizations. You're gonna
go, yeah. Very much a generalization.
I don't want to get canceled, right?
Yeah. But you know, we weave back and forth between that. And that's one of the questions I ask myself, whether it's in a relationship or even a working relationship with a female, to understand that we're different, and that's totally fine that we're different. And so I loved this question that it was, do you, and this is more in a relationship, do you want me to lend an ear or lend a hand?
Yeah.
So, and I think to start, it actually should be assuming let's lend an ear and come about it through curiosity is what I'm hearing you say of, okay, how is that impacting you? How did that make you feel?
Yeah.
So asking some of those probing and curious questions so we can hold space for them.
Yeah.
And so, and what you're saying is then that helps to create that masculine dynamic of, okay, well, maybe I'm not providing, like, let's just use an example. Maybe a wife is the breadwinner, and I'm like, okay, well, how am I supposed to navigate this relationship? That's one way to be able to do it. How else then, because that's a receiving dynamic, right? But also asking questions and being there. Mm-hmm. How else do you help to facilitate or navigate men communicating their own emotions? Because part of emotional intelligence is not only receiving, but it's also giving or communicating there.
Yeah, so I would say that it needs to be made super clear that we've been talking about how the masculine is present in men and women in all genders. The masculine is there for everybody. Men tend to lean towards wanting to express their masculine more. They would rather be more of the masculine in the relationship. But then on the flip side, most women, like, statistically, would rather be courted. They would rather be I hate submissive, but more on the receiving end, right? They would rather be protected. They would rather be in their chaos. They would rather be in their beauty and their nourishment and the flow, right? They would rather relax into that surrender. And the thing is, like, you and I have that part in us too, right? It's just a matter of how big it is and how deep the desire is to be chaotic, to be free-flowing, to have this creativity. And I think that that's the masculine and the feminine that's within all of us. It's the yin and the yang.
And there'll be certain situations where that you'll kind of weave back and forth, where there may be, and I've seen that in couples where I'm like, oh, that's really interesting to see those two different polarities in them, and it fits so perfectly, but it's in different situations where they kind of weave back and forth, where one may be more in their masculinity or in their masculine in that way. So it's interesting.
Yeah. You're right. So, like, in any given moment, I can be acting or living from my masculine or my feminine as a man. And the same thing goes for women. Now, I think with men, we're dished a very tall order, right? Of, like, when is the right time to be in my masculine? When is the right time to take a load off and be in my feminine and let some steam out, right? So, in general, like, men's groups, in my experience, can often be like that space where you're able to dive into your feminine. You're able to, like, actually, like, be your, you know, share for like 5 or 10 minutes about, like, what's going on, what you're currently experiencing, let off some steam from the top of that tank. but I also talk about emotional agility, and that's really what I think emotional intelligence really is. It's like, I'm aware of those emotions, but is now the right time for me to be in my emotions, to be in my feminine, or is now the time it's calling me to be in my masculine? I'll give a great example. And this is kind of how we got here in the first place of this current dynamic of masculine and feminine. If you think about war, I was just giving this example yesterday. Think about war. Most men are sent to war, right? If I'm facing battle and I'm going into battle and I'm literally killing people, I'm slaughtering people with a sword, with a gun, whatever it is, being in my emotions at that time is not productive for what needs to be done. Mm-hmm. However, I think probably the most wise and the most well-respected men in that situation would also set aside some time after that war to create sacred space to honor those people's lives that they took, to honor the people and what it took from them to take those lives. Honor the blood that was shed, right? Honor the emotions that are present, the shame, the fear, the sadness, all of those things. And I think those ceremonies that we've had since we were, you know, since the beginning of time, those ceremonies are really powerful because that's when we're actually accessing our feminine. We're accessing our tenderness because it's necessary. Where I think we've gotten in a place in our culture is that you go to war and you never process that shit.
Right.
Never it's talk just, about
okay.
It.
Yeah. Let's stay busy. Let's not actually feel the full emotions of that. And so creating space to be able to ask ourselves the question of how I feel, also honoring our emotions or honoring whatever that experience is, that helps to facilitate navigating those emotions. When you say, what is the difference between emotional agility and emotional intelligence?
Well, I guess I would say probably emotional agility kind of falls under that category of emotional intelligence. Maybe I should coin that or like talk more about that. I really like it because like I don't hear it talked about much in emotional intelligence. It's this idea that like the situation might call for a different side of you to show up. So I think of agility being like, I have these two parts of myself, right? Can I switch between them? Can I be dynamic enough to be heart-centered when my daughter walks up to me, right? But I can hold my ground and be masculine when the time calls for it, when I need to be, a disciplinarian with my daughter, right? When I need to show up and like love her in that way. So, and I don't have a daughter yet, but I think I'm going to be a girl dad. But I think like that's the balance that we want to be able to have. And it might be a moment for moment thing, because balance is a myth. It's really just about harmony. It's almost like you're moving from side to side. You're on a pendulum, right? I like to think of it actually as like, not the double helix, but the infinity symbol, you know, you're like kind of dancing side to side.
Right.
And you're never really finding balance. If you're finding balance, then you're still and you're not changing and you're not growing. So you're probably dying. Your cells are dying. So if you're constantly moving, then there's really no balance. And it's really just a matter of like finding harmony, finding as close to that center as you can get, you know, and being able to dance between the two. I think that's the art really of masculinity these days, is being able to be agile enough to have both.
That's powerful. And so to make sure, because I love that you continue to dive deep into this, what would be the definition between femininity and masculinity? Because a lot of times people will just think men are masculine, women are feminine, where there is this navigation of both. And it sounds like I've heard you name a couple of things like protector, presence and masculine, and emotions and receiving and feeling. So when somebody says, hey, what's the difference? How do you answer that?
Yeah, so the difference, think of it as a yin-yang. They are polar opposites, but when I say polar, that means that they exist on two poles, like the North Pole and the South Pole. They're part of one sphere, one of one existence. It's just opposite ends of, it's like two sides of the same coin. And what's cool is like the reason we have poles is because it creates polarity in our system. It creates gravity, all those, I'm not a scientist, right? But like it actually does something to the way that our earth spins. It provides a value. It creates tension. And so we need both. You need one to have the other, the same way that the yin yang works. If we can show a picture on the video version of this of yin yang, like that's what it is, you know?
Right.
They need each other. The same way that like, this is a great example, glass of water. Like this glass of water, cup of water, could not exist without the cup and with the water. If it was just a cup, it would just be a cup. If it was just the water would spill all over. Same thing as like a sandbox. Sandbox is not a sandbox without the sand and the box. So the box is the container, like this cup is. It holds it in place. It's the structure. It's the direction. It's the masculine. It's the vision that we have, where we're going. It's straight lines. It's walls, right? All these different aspects of masculine. The feminine is like the nourishment. It's like it's the sand. It's the water. It's the free flowing. It's the moving where is natural. It's the creativity. So think of it as the sand. If you didn't have a box surrounding sand, it would just fall flat. It would just turn into dirt. And if you just had a box, it wouldn't be much fun. You just have some wood. And right. Like an empty box. So when you have both, you have this beautiful harmony, which is, you know, the ability to create, the ability to have fun, the ability to create sandcastles and to play around in it, right? So it creates this beautiful harmony. So practically what that actually looks like, instead of talking about sandboxes all day, it's like the masculine is our sense, and this goes for men and women and everybody, my sense of direction. My sense of clarity, my decisiveness, my walls, my boundaries, my ability to be assertive, to take the lead, to initiate. The feminine is the creativity. it's almost like right brain, left brain, you know, analytical versus creative brain, right? So can I show up with nourishment? Can I show up with nurturing? Can I show up with fulfillment? All those deeper kind of like, I sort of think of it as like the masculine is the tree and the feminine is the soil, the nourishment of that tree, right? So we can't exist without each other. We can't, and we need both within us too.
And that's what I love, that that's part of creation, right? Is that it just, it's it shows such a divine creation there within that. And you said nourishment a couple of different times. What exactly do you mean by nourishment? Because I actually haven't heard that described within femininity before, but I connect with what you're saying there, but I want to hear more.
Yeah, maybe I can go a little deeper there. I feel like it's like it's the vitamins, it's the minerals, it's the nourishment, the soil, the I don't know. It's like when you look at a painting and you see that it doesn't just have straight lines, like it has like curves. Like even this wood here, like it has straight lines, but it also has like some detail in the wood. It's natural wood, and there's some like
depth to
variety,
it.
Right? There's this novelty that's present. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what's really cool. You can like, you can start to sense that there's, it's more than just one thing, right? Because if we were all just masculine, we'd be pretty singular of focus, and that would get a little boring, you know? So
no, that's powerful. And so we've dove into a couple of different dynamics. We talked about identity, about emotions, about masculinity and femininity, and in your work in really helping men find purpose and really train their emotional intelligence. What other dynamics are within that sphere that people are working through?
Man, there's a lot. I mean, I could take you through the whole 10-week journey that I take athletes through. I feel like we could probably go down another rabbit hole around this concept of like responsibility and what I'm responsible for versus what I'm not responsible for. Or what I'm responsible to. You know, all of this really starts with ownership. So I have a formula called the man up formula, and it's split between masculine and feminine dynamics within us, right? The actions and things that we do, how we show up. And it's a wheel. It's kind of like a yin yang, right? And so it has a masculine side, feminine side. So, but I start on the masculine side with this process because the first thing we have to do is have ownership. That's a masculine quality. That's something that all of us have within us. It's the ability to say, I'm responsible for me showing up today. I had an intention. I have a reason for being here. I have a purpose. So it's ownership for my experience. So the first thing we do in all my men's groups or anything I do, you know, everything I show up to, I have an intention. And I say, like, why am I here? What am I really doing here? Am I responsible to this, or am I just showing up because it's on my schedule? You know what I mean? Like, you know, Daniel booked me for this thing. I got to show up, right? And so that's the difference between being in responsibility or being a total victim to what you're showing up to.
Right.
So if I can't land that with guys or athletes, which usually with athletes, it's pretty easy because they've taken a lot of responsibility in their life, but some still are in their victim. You know, they're like stuck in this process of like, man, life's not happening for me, you know, like it's not going well. I'm waiting for someone, you know, like something big to happen, some job to come my way, some opportunity, some person to come into my life, you know, and save me, right? We're waiting for the savior almost. And so that's when we're in our victimhood, when we're not really responsible for our results.
And I love that you said that, because I will say, people ask the question, what makes you angry? And to be honest with you, my answer is victimhood, thinking that we don't have a option or the ability to have a choice in any given circumstances. Like, I've had a number of different dynamics in my life. Listeners know I lost my dad after his third bout with depression to suicide, and I made a decision not to be a victim in that moment. And so it's one of the things, because that's essentially saying I am powerless in this circumstance, and why I love the book Extreme Ownership, because we can take ownership and take responsibility, as you said. So how do you help to get people out of victimhood into responsibility and ownership?
Yeah. By the way, I didn't know that about your story. That's wild, and really sorry for your loss, but it sounds like it's really shaped your life in so many ways.
I think that we have the opportunity to have things. I used to say everything happens for a reason, but now I say God works through all things. I think we have the freedom of choice, and I made in that moment a decision to honor him through the way that I live my life and through the gratitude movement. And what he used to say is that we don't have control over everything that happens, but we do have control over how we respond to it. Yeah. So instead of having a great day, we can make it a great day, which became a mantra for my life. Yeah. So I'm able to honor him through that. But then I also didn't fully process some of the emotions. I just went straight into relentless positivity of like, yeah, I'm going to do that. So there's always, like you said, that harmony, that rhythm going back and forth.
Mm-hmm. That's beautiful, man. Thanks for sharing all that. I feel like, you know, it sounds like your father influenced your purpose and what you're up to now and like how you live your life. My mom is actually, I used to draw this tattoo, I have a tattoo on my shoulder that represents something I used to draw from my mom. It was a rose that she taught me how to draw. And my mom passed away when I was 15. And candidly, she was kind of my main emotional pillar. The person that actually in my family really understood me, really would hear me, would be with me. As most mothers do, right? And so when I lost her, I kind of felt like, man, like, where's my feet? Like, where's my emotional feet? Like, where can I be and be safe? You know what I mean? And be okay in my emotions, like in what I'm actually experiencing and not hide it. So I struggled for many years, and I feel like I found that through men's groups. I found that through, you know, mentors, different people in my life, and being able to be authentic. But I have this as a reminder to create things that people love, that people can enjoy, that people can heal with. She was a seamstress. She also taught me, obviously, how to draw and be creative and really tap into my feminine, right? And so I know how to sew because of her. She was a seamstress. So I have all these kind of like quote-unquote feminine qualities to me that I take a lot of pride in and really influence my work as well. So thank you for sharing that and how it's impacted you.
Yeah, and I'm sorry for your loss, and thanks for sharing about your mom.
Yeah,
and
thanks.
The influence that she's had.
Yeah, thank you. She's had a massive influence, and she still influences me today. I think you're spot on when it comes to like the victimhood there. Candidly, I had a lot of people around me because I was actually crying when my mom passed away, when I actually let it impact me, when I let myself actually feel all the emotions. I was the youngest person in the family. I was, you know, the emotional one at that time. I wasn't the only one crying, but my brother wasn't really crying. He was, you know, he was having his own experience, right? He was doing his own process work. My dad didn't really have time to process the way that maybe arguably he could have, right? Or would have been most beneficial. He was taking care of us. He was all of a sudden a single parent. And so I was the emotional one, and I could, you know, I could easily take on the identity of, oh, he's being a victim to this, and he's letting himself get into his emotions, and he's grieving wrong, right? But I didn't take on that identity. I didn't let like the emotions overwhelm me or take me into some pit. I saw it as like, I'm honoring my mom by grieving. And a lot of cultures do that. Like they take a week or so to grieve. Every year, I think there's grieving processes in many cultures to honor the dead, to honor what they served in their life. I think that's the best thing we can do is actually feel the grief that comes around with someone's life, the impact they've had on us. That's why I love the term like give someone their flowers, like while they're still living. Like I'm going to give people their flowers, you know?
Wow.
Right? Like I'm going to have moments where I'm acknowledging people for the impact they've had in my life, because I look back, I didn't get to acknowledge my mom for the impact she had on my life. So I get to live every day through her, through God, through that deeper inspiration, that deeper connection, to represent that, to represent, a bigger impact, a bigger love. And so I'm talking in circles here, but it feels like it's complete to me. I feel like we can take emotions and emotionality as victimhood, or we can see it as strength, right? As this is moving through me. I'm letting this move through me. I'm taking the sacred space to honor this person's life and honor the impact that they made by taking the space, processing it, letting it move through me. And then once a year, for 15 years, I would set aside time every year on her death day, like 4 hours where I would grieve. and stuff would come up. Like, I still have stuff that comes up. I still think about, you know, when I get married, I'm going to have the groom and the mother of the groom dance. And I'm going to be like, fuck, that's going to suck. You know, so I think life goes on and we continue to grieve because we have new processes. We have new events that show up. And, you know, life will never be the same. Yet, the crazy part about grief or sadness is that the reason we have sadness is because we love something so deep. We allowed ourselves to love that so deep, and we're still allowing ourselves to love it. We wouldn't feel sad otherwise.
And that's such a powerful way to honor sadness, is that I was actually allowed myself not to stay neutral and be in that middle ground, but I actually was able to feel the full spectrum of emotions. And by feeling the emotions, it's not, you know, so, oh, he's a victim, he lost it. No, it's actually like, well, he is, it's a masculine way and really outpouring because you're able to have that authenticity and vulnerability in that, where it's almost like a masculine stance within your femininity.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. That's where I'm holding both poles, right? So space holding is what I mentioned earlier, is like having presence, like showing up for presence for other people. So in a relationship or in a business encounter, like, can I hold space for all the frustration, all the sadness, everything that's going on here? We need to do that just as much for other people in our relationships as we do for our relationship with ourselves. So that's really where it is. In those moments, I'm holding space for myself, for my own emotional experience. That's where isolation is necessary. That's where we need to create that time and space for self-reflection, for meditation, for processing, for the anger work, you know, punching pillows. Like, we have to create that space for ourselves because there's no masculine process out there that's going to do it for us.
Right. And it's not always about, it's even the question I ask, okay, Q, tell me what to do and I'll do it. It's like, okay, well, actually you have to do nothing. Yeah. Wait, that's not, okay, next.
Yeah.
That's not what I wanted. Yeah. But that's what's so powerful. It's like, we've got to be, spend time in our own thoughts, ask ourselves the questions, let that stuff actually come up, go on a walk, whatever it is, be in nature. Mm-hmm. Have, you know, what I like to call the pause of, like, sometimes in life we need to pause.
Yeah.
And I love that you say hold space for someone in a conversation. Well, let's also hold space for ourselves so that we can fully understand and go into that. So that's powerful. So one, thank you so much for everything that you've shared. It's so powerful, the different, the way that you serve people and the impact that you have. And I see that this is just the beginning of how you will show up in the world, and I can't wait to hear your TED talk and books and everything. And one of the most impactful questions that I ever actually heard on a podcast, and part of the reason I started one, led to me meditating, which led to me being aware of my thoughts. And I was an autopilot before that and used to take 2-minute showers and have a TV on whenever I'd eat dinner, and which goes into a lot of our conversation today. But a long-winded question is, what would be your one piece of advice to your younger self?
Trust that you're not crazy. Mm. One of my deepest fears, as I really dig into my fears and like why I procrastinate or why I avoid things. And there's a lot of, there's some great work you can do through a book called It Didn't Start With You by Mark Wolin. Mm. And he has you really pinpoint your deepest fear. And for me, it's that I'm going to be crazy. People are going to call me psycho and they're going to put me off in a loony bin because I'm that weird. I'm that unique. I'm like too much in that way, right? Which is so wild, right? I don't know where that fear came from. If you actually read his book, it talks about how, like, where those fears normally come from. They're actually not from our life. They're from someone else's, like some ancestor sort of thing.
Right, because they've seen that some of the dynamics with us can go back 4 generations, right?
Yeah. In our body and the way that we show up and the way that we react to things. Yes, it's like hereditary, but it's more like energetic in our emotions and our body. So there's a lot of really good stuff in that book, like double down on that. But to answer your question, it would be like, remind my younger self that he's not crazy. Like, you're not crazy. Like, I remember actually going into a psychologist for the first time when I was 15. My mom had passed away, and me and my dad were like getting into arguments. And I think my dad would be fine with me sharing this by now. Like, I've shared things before, but like, I went to therapy because my dad was like, you know, you have an attitude problem. Like, we're not getting along, and we weren't, right? That's damn true. But, I went to therapy for the first time, and he asked me a bunch of questions, and I feel like I eventually I just started talking. Like, he just asked me two or three questions, and I just started talking and talking and talking and talking. And it was like I was journaling for the first time. I was like finally getting all my thoughts out, and I started like connecting dots, and I just started like realizing things. And it's like, this is what I feel, and I feel like this is happening because of this, and like, you know, this is going on, and you know, this is related to my dad or me. And at the end of it, he was like, well, it sounds like you have it all figured out. I'm like, are you shitting me? That's like what you pay a therapist for? Like, really? It was just this like acknowledgement, like, you're not crazy, Q, you know, like, you're not crazy for having these thoughts, for thinking these things, for having these ambitions or whatever, right? For crying, you know, still over your mom, those sorts of things. Like, you're not crazy for that. So I needed that. I needed someone to tell me that. Thankfully, I had a therapist to tell me that. But I could have used that reminder a lot more. It probably would have kept me in momentum, in more action. I probably would have started my business much earlier than I did. And I probably would have lived a much bolder and rich life.
Well, amazing. Thank you for sharing that. And I look forward to continuing to see. I mean, you're living that bold life now. And, you know, the future is bright for you. So our viewers and our listeners, I'm sure, are so excited to continue to engage with you and follow you. So where can they find you? I know you have some dynamics and things you do here in San Diego as well.
Yeah. So I run some in-person events here in San Diego. So for all the San Diego watchers or listeners, come out to one of our events. We run something called the Men's Meetup once a month. It's on the fourth Tuesday of the month. We run it down in Pacific Beach right now. At a big event venue, and it's an opportunity for guys to come together and connect and grow and really challenge their sense of comfort zone and answer some of these tougher questions. And really, guys walk out of there really connected, feeling really grounded, feeling like they've probably made a few new friends, and they're like-minded guys that they can really, really relate to. That's called the Men's Meetup, and you just go to mensmeetup.com to check it out and sign up. You'll be sent all the details. And then yeah, that'll take you to my website as well. You can find me on Instagram. I do a lot of content through there. Q Williams with two underscores at the end is my Instagram handle. Otherwise, you know, for this audience, I would say mensmeetup.com.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. We appreciate you. Everyone, thanks for listening in and watching. Remember that you have the choice to live life through a lens of gratitude. And as my dad would say, make it a great day.